Hello, everyone, and this is part two of our interview with the Sarah Benjamin.
Hey, guys. So, Sarah, thanks for joining us on another episode. You know, we got through your very interesting journey as a host and as a content creator. And this time around, we'd love to talk a little bit more about your background. Because if you check out Sarah Benjamin's site, by the way, guys, it's sarahhuangbenjamin.com. You know, you have this very interesting and beautiful heritage. Like, you have a British Chinese heritage, and yet you live in Singapore. So now that's like, you know, as far as I know, Singapore has like Chinese and Peranakan and Indian and Malay cultures mixed together. So, you know, basically you're like, you know, we were just talking about third culture citizens, but for you, is it like a sixth culture or something? There's like so many influences. Do you think that that has affected the way or the way you cook or what dishes you cook? And if so, like which part of you comes out the strongest, do you think, in your food?
Definitely. I think I spent a long time growing up trying to figure out how I fit in. You know, the thing about Singapore is that we're so multicultural, but I think people are very used to putting people into boxes. So like you said, Chinese, Malay, Indian, Eurasian. And if you don't really fit into these boxes, I think people don't know what to do with you. Are you Singaporean? Are you an expat? Are you British? You know, so my whole childhood was like that. I look mixed, but I sound Singaporean. I speak, I speak English like a Singaporean. Yeah. I speak Mandarin. I speak Hokkien. I speak Malay. So I think it was only as an adult and actually really through food, I was able to, I think, really feel my roots kind of connecting to Singapore. Because when I cook food from Singapore, when I use elements of the flavors or the techniques of Singaporean cuisines, I feel way more connected. And I think I also feel like I'm standing up for myself, because someone can say, oh, she doesn't look like a Singaporean, but I can cook really good Singaporean food. I know a lot about Singaporean hawker cuisine. I know a lot about the history of Singapore food. So you can say that, but I'm very confident that it's not true. And I think food has really allowed me to feel proud and feel like I belong in Singapore, which I think is something I didn't really know how to feel when I was growing up. Yeah. So with my cooking, definitely someone asked me, what is my cuisine? I said, it's called inauthentic. So it's not authentically anything. It's just whatever I want to create. So recently at my pop-up in KL, I did this menu as inauthentic food. And so, for example, I would do things like the first course was, do you guys know kueh pai tea?
Yeah.
It's this the kind dessert? Of like Peranakan dish. No, it's like a starter. So
oh, yeah.
It's like a fried crispy shell. And then there's
you put the fillings
there's
inside.
A filling.
Yeah.
Essentially filling like a lumpia like filling, cooked. Right?
Exactly, like a lumpia filling in a crispy shell. Yeah. So I wanted to do that because my family's also Peranakan, but my father is actually Jewish. So I thought it'd be really fun to do like cream cheese and smoked salmon roe.
Yeah.
Kind of like a lox and shmir bagel, but with a braised red cabbage at the bottom to like pay homage to the cooked filling. So it was a mishmash. You know, it is just everything on a plate, but as long as it tastes good, I feel like it's okay, you know?
There you go. Good is good. I mean, you know, if it tastes good, it doesn't matter what cuisine it is.
That actually sounds super delicious, if you ask me.
I know. I know. The lightness of that that crust would go really well with the lox, right? With the salmon and the cream cheese. Amazing. Sarah, are you a... It's a weird question. Sorry, because again, cable cut, so I haven't seen too much TV. Are you a trained chef or are you a professional cook? You know, I mean.
No, I'm not trained. I'm completely self-taught.
Awesome.
Yeah, I actually did think of going to culinary school when I was 18. My parents went against it, but they were like, are you sure? And I chose to go to university instead. But I kind of decided I could learn cooking.
Yeah.
I was very lucky to be born in the age of the internet, you see. So 20 years before me, you wouldn't be able to do that. But now you can, I mean, now it's amazing. You can Google how to spherify liquids. You know, you can learn complete molecular gastronomy online. So with all those resources, I felt very empowered to learn all these techniques on my own. Yeah.
Who was Sarah before AFN? Were you a banker, a lawyer, or, you know, no?
I was actually working in the restaurant industry in PR.
Okay.
So, yeah, I knew I wanted to work in food. So when I graduated, that's what I ended up doing. But I was applying to go back to school when I auditioned for Food Hero. So... no, I still haven't gone back to school. I was applying for a PhD at the time. But then it just worked out this way.
Who needs school? No, I'm just kidding.
I mean, I can always go back later. Who knows?
That's true. You know, I'm sure you watch other food content as well. On maybe TikTok or Instagram. Is there something that all these... influencers get wrong about Singaporean food that you would really love to correct? Because sometimes I see foreigners come here and do, you know, Filipino food tastings and things like that. And, you know, they get things wrong and there just seems like no way to correct them. So it gets a little frustrating for me. Do people get some stuff about Singapore food wrong too?
I think there are a few things, actually. One is that a lot of people think Singapore food is just Chinese food, which is definitely not true. I mean, yes, of course, there are a lot of Chinese dishes, but the whole beauty of Singapore food is the influence of the Chinese, the Malays, and the Indians kind of all together. And definitely, it's not all Chinese food. And also, that is not exactly the same as Malaysian food. Oh my God, I cannot emphasize this enough. So Singapore and Malaysia are always arguing about whose version of what dish is better. You know, roti prata, is it better in Singapore? Chicken rice, chili laksa. Crab, black pepper crab, laksa, exactly. But the thing is, if you travel around Malaysia, you actually realize it's totally different, the flavors and everything. Malaysia is a very big country, so Singapore is a very small country. So we're not, they have regional cuisines. We don't have regional cuisines. We're like one region. So yeah, it's actually not the same. That's like a major misconception, I think. But that's also a misconception that Singaporeans have about Malaysian food, that it's the same as our food. It's not the same, you know?
That I can say for sure.
Also, one more misconception. Have you heard of Singapore noodles? I'm sure you guys have come across this dish, right? Have you heard of it?
No.
It's this thing you can find. Yeah, it's not a thing that exists in Singapore, but if you're in the US and in Hong Kong, you can order this dish called Singapore noodles. It's basically fried bee hoon with curry powder, which I don't think sounds very good. It's not something you can get in Singapore. It's not a real thing.
Singapore noodles. I'll look for those.
Yeah, okay. But you don't have to try any.
It's hilarious. I developed an affinity towards Singapore food because of my work there previously. When we opened restaurants there on my free time, I would even go to the secret. Apparently, there's a secret hawker stall in the basement of Changi Airport where all of the employees of Changi would eat. Then they would take me there. My employees, because we opened in Jewel. So my employees would say, hey, we can go there. Just don't say you're not really an employee here. We can eat here in the basement. It was really good. I enjoyed it. One thing I noticed was, and this is something that the Grab drivers, the cab drivers would talk to me about as I would talk to them. The hawker culture, there aren't any young people who are handling it, the hawker stalls. It's more and more the first generation are they having a hard time passing it on to their kids because of there are more options out there right now, or because kids now are more connected due to the internet and they can't, they don't appreciate what they have right now? I mean, culturally, I don't know. I don't know how to phrase my question properly, but I know you get me, Sarah.
I understand what you're saying. I understand.
Yeah.
I actually just recently, very recently, wrapped up a three-year project researching hawker culture. So this is something we encountered a lot. And you would be surprised. Actually, it's a lot of the hawkers who don't want their children to take over. They've worked so hard to earn money to send their children to university so that they wouldn't have to have such a hard job. Why would they want their university-educated child to come and wake up at 4 a.m. and slog away? To them, they feel like, what was all that work for? But on the flip side, there are actually some stalls where the second, third generation is taking over. And I actually met a few. One of our respondents for this project, he was formerly a banker, actually. Mm-hmm. And his mother was a fifth generation hawker, but he was a banker. And his mother was running a stall selling bat chor mee. You know, are you guys familiar? Minced meat noodles, right?
Yes, yeah. I love bat chor mee.
So his mom.
That's the one with the subtle sauce, right? It's a dry noodle with the fish balls. And then the ground
dry
pork.
Noodle with, yeah, the minced meat, a bit of vinegar. But they also sell a soup version, which is really good.
Okay.
So he decided to leave banking and take over the stall. But he came in with the attitude that I'm going to make this a sustainable business. So he made his mom work with him on giving quantities for the ingredients. Because, you know, after that point, they just like go by feel, right? That's what all hawkers do. They're like, and a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But for him, he came in, he made his mom weigh all the ingredients, time the cooking of the noodles, everything, so that he can scale up, so that he can open more branches. Because then to him, that's how it can become a sustainable business. So I think there's a way for hawker food and hawker culture to survive, but it's just not going to look like the hawker culture of 50 and 100 years ago, you know, where, you know, it's like mom and pop stall. Maybe we'll see more mini chains. Maybe there'll be more outside workers, not just in the family. But I think this is like a turning point for hawker food in Singapore because of this issue.
Is it right to say then that we've got to go eat at these hawker stalls in the next 10 years because we might lose some of them?
Definitely. And in fact, I think there are specific dishes which are a little bit more endangered than others. One of them is char kway teow, which is very famous.
No, it's my favorite thing.
So the char kway teow has kind of been like widely known to be slightly endangered in Singapore because it's very hard work. You have to fry it to order. And you can't charge that much for it because there aren't really any premium ingredients, right? Mm. So maybe you can charge $3.50. And, you know, you're there frying all day long. So that's a very difficult dish to attract young people to because it's difficult to scale, you know? Whereas, okay, let's talk about chicken rice. Chicken rice is really easy to scale because you can buy industrial sized rice cookers, you can buy industrial sized pots, and you can have a central kitchen, poach all your chicken, which is kept at room temperature, and then split it up, send it out to your branches, and then they can sell to whoever. And that's what a lot of chicken rice companies do. That's an easy hawker dish to keep going. Char kway teow is the opposite. You can never scale up because you need someone to be frying it fresh. So that's something that's like, I would say if you're coming to Singapore, I mean, just eat hawker food anyway. But yeah, there are a few dishes which I think might start to disappear.
No.
I need to buy a plane ticket. I cannot lose char kway teow. Nobody makes good char kway teow in the Philippines. So I really, really need to go to either Malaysia or Singapore to get it.
You know,
you should learn. You should pick up the skill.
You know, ever since Singapore opened up, a lot of Filipinos have made it a point to travel to Singapore because, you know, you've heard of course, revenge travel. And Singapore mm-hmm. was always a popular destination, especially during the before the pandemic. So now that that it opened it mm-hmm. up, now that Singapore opened up, a lot, just on my feed, I can think of two or three or four or five people I know that have visited Singapore in the past couple of months. If the three of us were to visit, could you give us five places that you would feel that we have to go, regardless of the budget? It can go from expensive to cheap, whatever. We're game for it. And the place you would recommend and the dish that we must try.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. The expensive one, Richie, you will cover it, right? Like you said.
I'll take care of it.
Okay. Just clarifying.
I'm excited for this list. I'm excited for Sarah's list.
You have it recorded.
Yeah.
The evidence is here. You know, Richie, you can't get out of it now. okay, so definitely I'm a cocktail kind of girl. I love cocktails. And I think Singapore has actually one of the best cocktail scenes in the world, not just mm-hmm. in Asia. My favorite is this place called Gibson Bar. It's mm-hmm. this, it's in a shop house. It's upstairs. It's very cute. It's cozy. They make drinks with a lot of Asian ingredients, Asian fruits. It's just a really good classic bar, and they have oysters for happy hour. So that's always great. This is the next place I would also recommend is a kind of, it's a bar and restaurant. So it started off as a bar. It's a bar upstairs. It's called Native Bar. Mm. They're very well known for using only Asian alcohol. So only alcohol that's been produced in Asia. It's really interesting. But they recently opened a restaurant downstairs, and that place is so good. So they have, it's kind of slightly elevated Singaporean and Asian flavors. They have the standout dish that I remember is they have this chicken, we call it pao fan, which means like soaked rice. So mm-hmm. it's a very flavorful chicken stock on top of rice with puffed rice and then chicken and then chili sauce. It's so good. So definitely that.
Okay.
I recommend, this is kind of cheating because it's a whole hawker center, but whatever. Old Airport Road. Old Airport Road Food Center is a very big hawker center, but you can get a lot of things there. Mm-hmm. Most things that you find there are really good. So you can kind of eat your way around. Mm-hmm. I really like the prawn mee there.
Isn't that where the legendary Nasi Lemak is? The Old Airport Road Food Center?
Nasi Lemak? I don't think there's Nasi Lemak there. There's one in Changi Village. Are you thinking of Changi Village?
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay. I talked about Singapore and Malaysia. Nasi Lemak is the one thing that, like, I won't recommend. I mean, you can get good Nasi Lemak in Singapore, but I spend a lot of time in Malaysia.
Yeah.
And, like, when I have Malaysian friends, I'm like, I'm not going to take you to eat Nasi Lemak. They don't want to eat on Nasi Lemak. I'm not going to, like, ask for trouble. Let Malaysia have nasi lemak. That is their thing. Like, if you want to eat nasi lemak, definitely go to Malaysia. You know, we have good nasi lemak in Singapore, but they are all trying to taste like the nasi lemak in Malaysia. So may as well just cut out the middleman, go there. So in Singapore, okay, let me think. I would also definitely eat some Japanese food. I think Singapore is one of the best places to get Japanese food outside of Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a full range. You can get like very expensive omakase, you know, like piece by piece sushi. And there are actually a ton of those. So that's kind of like beyond my price range. I can't recommend any. But there is a building called Orchard Plaza.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit sleazy. I mean, sometimes you see like...
I like it already.
Japanese businessmen. Yeah. No, but you know, honestly, where I really think like where there is like some sleazy activity, there's usually good food because, you know, after people like whatever, get
is
drunk.
This, is
and,
this
like,
the building beside the Chancellor Hotel?
It's Along like Orchard? A cup. So it's Yes.
That's my hotel or yes. Chancellor. I know the building you're talking about.
That's why you picked that hotel.
Yeah, I know the building you're talking about. Because when I walk the sidewalk, the streets, I know why it's sleazy. They hire Filipino entertainers. They're like, "Hello, sir. Are you Filipino?" I'm like, yep.
No, but you know, they didn't tell you didn't hear it because I guess because they recognize you as Filipino. But they all speak Japanese.
Yes.
So they welcome people in Japanese, and because that whole building is kind of like Japanese salarymen after work. So there are amazing izakayas there, good drinking places.
The sake
I really
bar.
Like this place called...
I've seen the sake
bar. Yeah, sake bar. There's a place downstairs called Apollon, Apollo with an N.
Yeah.
And they do sake, fresh sake by the keg. So they bring the kegs over from Japan and then they dispense that fresh in Singapore in the bar. So that's a really fun place. I love that. How many have I said? I've lost count. I'm like...
One more. Just give us one more.
One more. Let me think. So I think one thing that you can... Okay, actually two things. This is kind of cheating, but two things you can only really get in Singapore are bak chor mee, like I mentioned earlier, which is the mincemeat noodle. That's a dish that has no equivalent in Malaysia. So it's very unique to Singapore. And... the other one is Hainanese curry rice, which is also very, you know, special to Singapore, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So two places I'd recommend for that. The bak chor mee, there's a very famous one. It has one Michelin star. It's the only Michelin star hawker in the world now. And it's called Hill Street Tai Hua mincemeat noodle, I think. Hill Street Tai Hua.
They're so good. They're so good.
It's the best. You know, I like it because their version is a little bit more sour. There's vinegar in this dish. And I like how sour and like lardy it is. It's like very slicked with lard and then there's vinegar. And then for the Hainanese curry rice, I like this place called Scissors Cut Curry Rice.
I've been there.
So you point at what you want, like pork chop, whatever. And then they hack away at everything with a pair of scissors to cut it into bite-sized pieces. And then they drench it with this thick Hainanese curry. And this is actually, Chef Edward, you said Filipinos don't like spice.
Mm.
This is like the perfect level of spice for Filipinos then because it's very mild.
Yeah.
It's spiced, but it's not spicy, you know?
I was going to mention that, Sarah. That is the closest curry that I know to Filipino chicken curry. We have a chicken curry dish that's very native.
Oh, really?
And that Malay curry, it's the closest thing. The color, the smell, the flavor, that's the closest thing we have. Because the spice level is almost close to none, right? Very, very mild. I have had that curry. I know what you're talking about. So I know that's the closest thing we have to the Filipino version here. So that's a good list, guys.
I mean, that's awesome. Yeah, I mean, I want to try all of the... I mean, I'm not saying I'm excited about going to the sleazy place, but if there's like good Japanese food there, I'll go...
No, it's
I mean, it sounds like Chef Edward knows his way around.
No, because it was like a good 3-4 years of me traveling back and forth for work. So every weekend, you get used to a certain hotel. You don't want to find other hotels anymore just because you know the area, you know where to walk for breakfast. So I'd always be there. And at night, if they assign me to the wrong wing, you could hear the party places, the clubs downstairs near that building. So I would ask the hotel, hey, you know, I'm here every week. Can you move me to the quieter wing of the hotel? Then when you go down, you'd be like, sir. And I'm like, nope. I'm looking for hawker food. I'm looking for supper. Don't bug me.
Just admit it, Chef. You said...
Yeah.
You had me at sleazy place.
Sleazy place. Yeah. Charmin,
no, speaking of hawker food, right? I remember going to Singapore about maybe 10 years ago. And I saw this sign outside a hawker center, like the 10 Singaporean dishes you have to try or something.
Mm.
And I was always fascinated with that because I could never decide what the 10 Filipino dishes every foreigner must try be without angering anyone.
Mm.
So I was pretty fascinated that Singapore actually chose 10 dishes. I don't remember.
Yeah.
I think Hainanese chicken and char kway teow are there, you know. So I was wondering if what's the one dish that nobody ever talks about that, you know, people should try. Because I think bok choy mee is getting its day in the sun. So maybe is there another hawker favorite that people tend to forget? Like, because when people go to Singapore here, we usually have like 2 or 3 days to eat. So that means that's just around, you know, three dinners, 3 breakfasts, 3 lunches. So we tend to miss out on some hawker dishes. So which one should be priority number one, you think?
Okay, so if it's something you're probably not familiar with, have you heard of kway chap?
No, I have not heard. That sounds like fried sauce. Is that like sauce cake or something?
It is sauce. The last word, chap, means gravy, right? It's this dish that, firstly, you have to eat pork and you have to eat innards. So if you don't eat pig innards, then sorry, it's not for you. But it's basically pig innards, especially intestines, braised in like this like dark spiced master stock. And you can order whichever parts you want. So you can get it's all braised. So you get intestines. Usually they have different types of intestines. So I don't really know the difference, to be honest, because the hawker uncle that I go to, he said there are 4 types of intestines. I don't know why there are 4 types of intestines, but apparently there are 4 types. You can get pig's tongue. Uh-huh. You can get like pig skin, pork belly. You can get, you know, different bits. And then they come with like tofu and egg and all that. And then it comes with a dish of the really soft, kind of like kway. It's what they call the kway. It's kway. It's not kway tiao. It's like, it's wider. It's very wide. And very soft and very slippery, and then it's in that braising sauce as well. Anyway, it's so good. It's like one of my favorite dishes.
I've ordered this in a hawker stall. I remember this.
Yeah. What did you think?
The noodle salad that you're mentioning is like the Chinese. You know how they have a dim sum that looks like logs, that looks like
chong fresh, fun.
I like chong fun.
Yeah. So it's similar to that. It's very very
thin. Bit like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I've ordered this. I don't remember where, but I remember when you described it with all these offals and all the other meats, I said, I've ordered this, even with a braised egg on the side. Yeah, I remember.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That sounds like up our alley, no? That's something I would
eat a chef dish.
Lot of.
It's a chef dish. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can see Richie's face. Guys, for those who are listening to the podcast, I can see Richie's face. He's Mr. No to intestines and opal.
Yeah, you were very quiet.
Picky eater. Yeah. So
yeah.
He lives up to his name.
Yeah. Well, okay, Richie, for you, I recommend braised duck rice. Have you had that?
So yes. Okay.
It's kind of similar. Yeah. People always talk about chicken rice, but I think duck rice is so good. Mm. You know, they braise the duck in that same kind of stock, like the spice stock. And then they cook the rice in it. So the rice is really flavorful. Mm-hmm. That's one of my favorite dishes. So you can have that. We will have
innards.
Yeah. And then we're all happy.
To wrap things up, Sarah, we want to know more about you and your domestic life too. Who's Sarah Benjamin at home? Are you married? Do you have kids or plans of having kids in the future? How is it? How is it at home? I mean, do you share this passion for cooking and this lifestyle of cooking right now with your
I love her videos, by the way, where her parents are with her cooking and tasting food. It's super
awesome.
Interesting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So,
last year I moved back in with my parents after not living with them for a few years. And it's been really nice actually. I'm an only child, so I am very close to my parents. I actually really love having them in my videos. My mom especially is like a natural. I always get people telling me like, wow, your mom is such a natural. And it's true. She's the least self-conscious person ever, you know, and she loves to eat. So that's like a great combination for her food show. It's been really nice, like living with them again. I hope that I have children sometime soon, maybe like in a couple of years. But for now, you know, Richie, you mentioned revenge travel. That's honestly, that's what I've got in my mind. Like,
nice.
You know,
right.
Kids, yes, I would love to have kids. But for now, I'm all about seeing the world, you know.
Great.
Well, if you're coming to Manila, you probably will never have to pay for a meal because we know everyone will make sure you get to eat without paying anything. Yeah.
So now you got to hold Charwin to that word. Mm-hmm.
Hey, worst case scenario, I cook, right? Worst case scenario, I cook. So it's okay.
We'll find the Filipino food with chilies, you know? Just to clarify, we love hot food, spicy food. But the spice I was referring to, it's more the... Like, for example, we never use nutmeg or, you know, all these other spices. Cardamom. You would never see cardamom in any Filipino dish.
Mm.
No, Charwin? I mean, what do you think, right?
I don't even know if there's a Filipino word for cardamom. Like,
no, we don't.
I think we don't even know what... Yeah.
Yeah, but we make sure that Sarah gets to eat the hottest, spiciest foods that we have, like really sweat-inducing. The people who make the best chili garlic, right? We're known for our chili garlics here. Yeah.
Well, I was actually talking with Sarah about why we don't have a lot of spicy food in the Philippines. That's probably another episode in the future.
It's another hour of talking about it.
But it's not Bicol as people think. So that's something very interesting that I picked up over the last year or so. Hopefully, Sarah, you can find the occasion or the reason to travel here because we would love to show you around, maybe even record an episode while eating somewhere, right? That would be kind of interesting.
Oh my god, that would be so fun. Yeah, I really want to come back to the Philippines, hopefully next year.
All right, and with that, guys, Sarah, it's been an awesome hour of interviewing you and talking to you and just sharing these stories with about food and the culture and life that you're having at AFN and in Singapore. Thank you. The Sinigang would want to thank you for saying yes to being on our show. Any last words, anything you want to promote, anything you want to, tell our billions of listeners, like for to follow you on social media and all that, please do. This is the time.
Yeah. Please follow me on Instagram at Sarah Huang Benjamin. And also, you can search me on YouTube. I've got plenty of content for you to follow, whether it's recipes or snippets of food history, or even little bits of travel. So yeah, follow me, say hi, message me. I want to hear from you.
All right. Thank you, Sarah. And with that, that has been another wonderful, delicious episode of the Sinigang. This is Chef Edward Bugia saying goodbye in behalf of my fellow Sinigang members, Richie Zamora, the pickiest eater in the world, and Chef Charwin T. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and bye!
Bye!
Bye!